Blog Talk Radio.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation program or show, if you want to call it, about survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And tonight, very lucky, I have Charmaine Loverin, who I'm going to be interviewing tonight, but I'm going to get to her in just a moment. Nice to see you here.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
So I'm just going to get a couple of things out of the way. One being about our healing garden, which I've talked about many, many, many times, and I'm going to say it one more time again tonight. I know that in September the 30th is going to be the actual date that they're finally going to have people come here. And again, like I say, if you want to donate something, whether it be a plant or some kind of, or plant anything to go in the garden. And if you're a survivor, this is very important as well. And Art asked me to suggest this to you, that if you have something that's some kind of significance that's, related to your abuse, that you might want to put in the garden, where you're quite welcome to do that as well. And the gatehouse is located down here at 3101 Lakeshore West Drive, Lakeshore West Boulevard, Toronto, or Old Etobicoke. And we're also located on the web at www.thegatehouse.org. And also you can email me too as well at personaltransformation@thegatehouse.org as well. And if you have any questions or, you know, something you might want to talk about in the future or concern, anything at all, don't be shy. You know, we're here, good or bad. We'll take it, listen to it. We definitely want your suggestions. That's very, very important. Unfortunately, outside it's not a very nice night. It's kind of cloudy, overcast. It almost feels like fall. And I wish it was a little sunnier. Last Thursday was a lot nicer. And I must apologize. Last week, I was not myself. I was not feeling very well. I'm fighting. I either got a flu or a virus or something. I'm still kind of coughing and hacking. I tried to talk last week. I had a hard time. So I ended up cutting it short. So I really apologize for that. So I assure you my dialogue tonight will be, it'll be in much better form. But nevertheless, talked about the healing garden, and I guess that's good enough for now in regards to that. And now I think I'd like to just jump right over to Charmaine. So, thank you for being here.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. When you asked me, I was like, yes, of course.
So I guess the first thing I really want to dive into, tomorrow is a big thing tomorrow. You know what, I won't say too much. I'd rather let you just say it because I know you've been working a lot of hard sweat, brow, organize this for a long time, and it's very important for people to know what you happen to go here and what's going to transpire tomorrow. Please.
Awesome. Okay, well, tomorrow is a really big day, yeah. It will be our third petition walk, and we are petitioning to the TDSB, but all school boards in general, to vet the program Empowering Voices Awareness and put in Abuse Awareness Week into our school systems. And so what's happening tomorrow is this petition walk. And we have a group of people that will be meeting at Dundas Square tomorrow at 8 a.m. It's an all-day event till 7 p.m. And so people can join this walk right at 8 a.m. because we do have some media down there that will be taking pictures of the group. But people, if they can't join at 8 a.m., they can also join anytime throughout the day up until 7 p.m. We have also other groups of petitioners who will be at various schools across the GTA, Brampton, North York, who will be standing outside of their local community schools and handing out the petition card, which directs people to the website empoweringvoicesawarenessmonth.org. And there is a live petition on that website where people can actually vote yes to get those school boards to vet the program. Now, what's kind of neat about tomorrow is we actually have a genius joining us, Gabby. She will be my team lead for downtown, but she has put together a QR code to the website so that we can immediately get votes on site tomorrow throughout the whole day.
That's incredible.
So it's going to be neat to see the real-time votes that are actually going to be happening. So I'm pretty excited about tomorrow because it just is only a few days after my interview with CTV National News. They had called me in for an interview. They support this program. So they call me in as one of their strong advocates when it comes to any kind of abuse or youth issues dealing with suicide, depression, or anxiety. And what had happened on September 4th, there was an article released by the World Health Organization. Alarming numbers have come in regards to the numbers between 15 years old to 29 where suicide is on the increase.
Yeah.
So they had brought me in because not only do I have that background of experience where I had faced a time of isolation and shame and all of that too, and I did attempt suicide. And they call me in because of what I do to use my story to empower where I'm at today. And that article speaks to the request by World Health Organization to get the government and the education system to step up their higher level of commitment in putting a solution and prevention methods in to help with the issues of suicide, especially teen suicide. So I think and with this support, with them calling me in like this, it just goes to show that we need a mandatory and sustainable program that helps students, that helps parents, and helps school staff away from fear, and helps them be able to talk about abuse, to be able to talk about this topic without fear, and be confident and educated, knowing that this is just an issue that happens so frequently, and because it's such a taboo topic, we haven't seen a sustainable program in place yet in our school system. So this is how, and this is why, we have a good following now on this program, and this is why this petition matters tomorrow on this wall. Thank you for asking me to bring this up in our conversation, because anyone who's listening and can join this walk and feels like it matters to them and something can make a difference for our children and our future and our school staff and our parents, then come join us.
That's absolutely wonderful. Now, can you maybe say a phone number or a website that they can maybe link up to either tonight or tomorrow throughout the day if they want to come down and join throughout the day, wherever, depending on people's
schedule? Absolutely. People are just joining throughout the whole day, actually, last minute here, which is pretty good. And we've got about probably 20 to 40 people already doing it. So where people can join and get in touch with me is either via the website, which is empoweringvoicesawarenessmonth.org. You can also reach me at ruthlesscoaching@gmail.com, which is my practice that I do outside of this program. And let me see, Facebook. If you're on Facebook, again, my name is Charmaine Loverin. You can certainly Facebook me. And we have a group for Empowering Voices Awareness Month with the event on there. So if you join me on Facebook, I'll connect you to the group, and you can join the event there and see all the details. But on the website, for sure, you'll see all the details.
That's wonderful. Great. Mm-hmm. So another question relating to that. It's like, this is such a really, really big thing, and it's a really big thing here, especially here in Toronto, Canada, mm-hmm. period. Now, are you aware of this actually taking place in any other countries, such as the U.S., the bigger places like that, or UK?
Well, look at Aaron's Law. I don't.
Yeah, that's what I was asking you. If you, yeah.
Yeah, Aaron's Law, E-R-I-N-S, Law, L-A-W. If you Google her, she is just getting approval,
state after state
by the government, getting the education system, the mandatory program in their schools. Now, if they can do it, we can do it.
Absolutely.
Right? So absolutely. It just goes to show that there is alarming numbers out there, obviously, and it is an epidemic all across the world. I mean, look at rape happening in underdeveloped countries, third world countries. So, and I know the Gatehouse has an international platform, too, and anything we can do to transform and break through this issue and see the numbers decline, I'm all about.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great, because I know it's even myself. I follow Twitter quite extensively there now, because I've got a really big following, as I was telling you, in regards mm-hmm. to other survivors and other mm-hmm. other support venue or other support groups that are doing this. Mm-hmm. It's amazing, because I keep finding them out there. I mean, granted, they're few and far between, but mm-hmm. I have come across quite a vast, you know, amount. I mean, mm-hmm. not mainly in the U.S. and the U.K. is where I keep finding them. Mm-hmm. There's some in Ireland as well, mm-hmm. and other centers such as other countries, like Africa, a place like that. Mm-hmm. I haven't really found anybody yet, but I'm sure I'm going to find somebody.
Yeah.
So it's still a very, excuse me, a very taboo thing there mm-hmm. and some of the other third world countries. Like, I'm also interested in places like down in the West Indies. I know, like you say, it's international. It's global. It's a real big issue.
Yeah.
And I'm searching and I'm looking to try to find mm-hmm. other people doing something.
You should get Amita Mansourian.
Yes. Actually, very good point.
She's there in Ghana.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And
I know she's been doing that down there.
She's a facilitator here also. And she'd be great to address what you just mentioned, for sure. She'd be more researched, more educated on that and experienced than
I. Because I'm just trying to figure this stuff out myself.
Yeah, well, it's good to have that. It's good to have, not just here locally, but clearly we're on air on global.
Yeah.
So if you can be an access for people in Africa, if you can be an access for anyone who's listening around the world on how they can heal from child sexual abuse, then you're a hero. I love you. I think this is great. Absolutely. So I think that, and if I can help it out in any way where I hear anything in different countries other than our own, then I'm happy to.
Yeah, because I really would like to compose some mm-hmm. kind of a website just strictly for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've heard it time after time, just on Twitter, in regards to there's nothing there, or if there is, they don't know where to go. People really have to research, which is really hard in our country. I'll stick to our country right at this particular point. I know abroad, like outside, like this big center of the GTA,
mm-hmm.
and like Northern Ontario, and not just Northern Ontario, like places like Manitoba, you know, Quebec. Actually, Quebec, there's not a whole lot of support there either,
mm-hmm.
and it's really really lacking, And I know that with my experience here at the Gay House as well, I know we've had the odd person call from Quebec just for some kind of support,
mm-hmm.
as an example. You know, it's only over the phone, but it's still better than nothing. And it's, I mean, if you can't get it in your own province, there's something really, really wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, I can't even say that because it's not for me to say, but still, it is wrong. There should be something. And the more people bark about it is my point, I guess, what I'm trying to get at. The more people bark about it, and if they go to their politicians, for example,
mm-hmm.
and they say, well, there's nothing here, then maybe something will be done. But the more people have to talk about it, the more people talk about it, in this country anyway, that's the only way things get done.
Yeah, well, I had a gentleman reach out to me on Facebook today, and he was acknowledging how I can have the kind of courage to be able to keep speaking about my story all the time. Because he hopes that one day he can actually get to that place too. And I really, really felt, I really empathized with him because I certainly know what that feeling is like where you're not talking, you don't know how to talk, you don't know where to start. And it was just really, I remember when it all turned for me in my healing was that I didn't want the resentment anymore. I didn't want to be hiding anymore and pretending my life and I just wanted to break free from that and not be afraid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and I
found out that a lot of the romantic relationships especially that I was drawing towards me was a theme of what was familiar in the past. And I wasn't interested in living a life like that. We only get one life to live, right? So it's common to just be okay with life and get going along with life. And we don't understand the kind of barriers we actually do put up when we don't speak. And then when we start to heal and go through this work, like what the Gate House has to offer and what you're doing here, Stuart, in transformation healing, like it literally is transformation healing. I went through counseling and I've read a lot of books, which is information healing, right? And when you've got... Yeah, and when you've gone through transformation healing, I think that's where you see how you can actually authentically put the past in the past and be really clearly present and be optimistic and inspired for your future, empowered by your story more versus having it run you anymore. So I'm really excited for what you're up to and what you're doing with this.
Well, I see great. Thank you for saying that. I see really great things. And like I say, to me, it's about the survivor's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to do whatever I possibly can to show, or rather to tell people that I'm exercising my voice. You're exercising your voice. It is possible. I know it's hard to do, and not everybody can do this sort of thing, but I'm basically here to tell you and to show you that, hey, I'm doing this, and it's not about me. It's about everybody. If you can hear me now talking about this, then that shows you that you can exercise your voice, and I'm not being ridiculed or spanked or whatever, like, you know, or anything like that. I'm exercising my voice. I'm exercising my democratic right as a human being, if I may put it in that manner. And nothing's going to stop me from doing this as long as I behave myself, which I am. So I'm sticking to the cause, and that's what I want. And I want people to understand that, hey, I'm exercising my voice. You can do the same thing too. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it publicly like I am.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find a spot that you can talk to somebody.
Yeah, just small groups, whatever.
Small
and
groups.
You get that
one person you can trust.
Yep,
now, one person you can trust. And you can talk about this.
It starts there.
It starts there. And you don't have to feel like you're going to be, you're going to be chastised or they're going to put you in a corner and not talk to you anymore. You know, we're giving you some kind of empowerment, you know, like to get on with things.
Because you don't know actually what lays ahead. You probably didn't know you'd be doing this.
I had no idea.
2 years or 3 years ago, right?
No idea. No idea.
Yeah.
And I'll still say it, and I'm not afraid to say it. When I came up these stairs here, actually it's almost 5 years ago now that I came here, that when I came up these stairs, my goal was to come in this place, and I shouldn't say this, I'm not going to say it like that, that's not right. When I came into the gatehouse, and I was going to do my time, do the program, and my life was going to be fine, and I'd never come back. Well, I haven't left.
Yeah.
You know, I own pretty much my life to the gatehouse, because if I hadn't came here, I would have been either dead or on the street. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I just did not see another way. And thanks to the gatehouse and the support that I have here from participants and the facilitators,
mm-hmm.
I understand there's a better way.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't have to feel like this.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm so lucky to come across paths with you as well. You are so, you give me strength in ways you don't even realize.
Mm-hmm.
Just with your confidence and what you're doing yourself, it shows that, well, hey, well, if you can, why can't I do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's so very important because, you know, if people can see that, then they can realize, well, they don't have to stay under the leaves. They can come out and say and talk about this.
Mm-hmm. And not be afraid anymore.
And not be afraid anymore.
And be proud, because, like, it's something that, be proud from a place that you're actually breaking silence for other people. That's exactly what it is for me.
So thank you. I couldn't have said any better myself.
Yeah. And I always get moved by this, because it's like, When you're listening to someone who is so afraid to not even know how to begin to start, and it comes, you see the terror.
Oh yes.
You see the terror of the pain. You see what fear there is, what people might think from family. You see the fear of what people might think of you, all of that, and. Wow, when you finally realize, like, none of that actually matters, and all that matters is your voice, you're off to the races. But, boy, it takes some time, for sure.
It sure does, and that's what I've really discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as I described about coming to the house, the fear that I carried, never mind all the shame and all this stuff I carried on top of that, which I'm pretty much getting over with now, right? But that fear was the biggest thing, and I never ever thought possible that I'd be sitting here doing this now, because I honestly figured I'd be on my way doing my own thing again, whatever that might have been. And I'm just so grateful that I had this opportunity to speak like I have. I just could have never found it. People put a couple of ideas in my head, thanks to people around the gatehouse, and they kind of put the bug in me to do this, and then wow, I'm doing it. So I'll keep doing as long as I can.
Yeah. Absolutely. I remember the two times I had to tell the truth around my story, and it was the first time I told it when I was 15, and it wasn't supported, of course, at all at that time. And the second time I had to speak up about it was when I was 21, and I had decided to charge one of my offenders. And the first time, I actually came from a belief at 15 years old that we could get through this as a family. I never had it like, I was scared, for sure I was scared, but I never had it like I was going to be disowned from my family at all, right? And I never saw that coming. So I went into isolation and suicide, 17 years old, 18, survived all that, then went on with my life, and 21 years old, found out that one of my offenders had abused one of my other family members, and that's when I charged. I didn't even think, I'm not even scared, I had to stop this guy, and I didn't even think what was going to happen, right? So I wasn't afraid, I just wanted to get this stopped. So I went to the police, and at that time I was in Mississauga, and they told me if I was really sure, I even find myself getting cold and shaking about it, because it was a big deal. So at 21, I had to go to the area where I had all of the abuse happen to me and go to the community and go to the local police station and make my statement. And where I started to get really, really scared was that the court was finally in action. And the response I was getting from my family was I was the bad person. Oh, horrible. It was really, really bad. And then it was probably about 21 again where I had attempted suicide again, and I just started healing after I had survived that, and it was there where I started to see that that truth is okay to be with, and it's okay to tell, and we can't be responsible, we cannot be responsible to how people react to it. You know, we're going to react to truth, whether we like it or not, right?
Good or bad.
Good or bad. And see, when I had told the truth at 15 and was disowned, when one of my families found out that it was actually the truth, she had went into suicide herself because she just felt so responsible for believing the offender at 15. You know, and so when people find out the truth, they can become suicidal themselves, and that is a killer, you know. So, I don't know. Being with the truth, I think, is the only way that I live my life now. I'm not hidden anymore. I don't pretend anymore. I can be with the truth, whether I like it or not. So,
Well, which I guess it kind of brought you to what you do now, which is Ruthless Coaching or the Transformational Practitioner.
Yeah.
I just love saying that.
Yeah, I love that.
Tell us about that.
Yeah,
please.
Transformation practitioner. I actually often get asked about what is that exactly. And it's very, very similar to a life coach. What's different between a life coach and a transformational practitioner is, I think, just bottom line, the training. The training, I do have some college education training. But more training with an organization called Landmark Worldwide. And it's a enterprise where I chose to get help and get training and coaching. And the learning is from transformational learning. And basically what that is where I use it in my practice now 3 years, is where, for example, if someone's dealing with post-trauma or other area of divorce and separated with their parents, and if you are authentically really just wanting this to all stop, the issue,
mm-hmm.
you have to be willing to get into an uncomfortable zone and be willing to take on the coaching, which means taking on assignments to apply to the area that you're working on. I usually give the analogy of hiring a coach where you want to win a gold at the Olympics, because these kind of coaches actually see what's missing in your step, such that you can, if that step were in, it would make a huge difference to have you win the game. It's very similar to that, except for in listening, we're trained to listen to your story. And when we're listening to your story, we hear something that which is missing, that if it were there, would break, have you break through that and go, ah, it's like a aha moment. It's like you just never look back to that again, and you're so motivated to like live differently. So that's what Ruthless Coaching is.
So what was your drive to bring you to do that?
Just seeing the miracles out of the work, like just seeing that, wow, if people can go from believing that something is impossible to having possible come in, like I've seen families not talk to each other for 5 to 8 years, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, through the work of transformation learning, they're able to authentically see the impact of what certain areas that happen for them in their life, that they're able to break through that. And then what happens is they're able to go into the conversation with that family member that they've been haven't talked to in 5 to 8 years. And then all of a sudden they got a brand new, newfound trust, newfound want and desire to be together again. And so for me to live in the world of impossible just doesn't even exist anymore. Because if you bring something to me that you feel is impossible, as your coach, I am 100% guaranteed I'll cause a result with you to get that impossible out of the way.
Okay. Could you give me, I don't expect you to give away the farm, but can you give me some examples of your techniques, how you would apply that, or how you would get that couple, for example, to do that?
Yeah. You mean a divorce couple?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely. One technique would be the interview. I love the interview. The interview allows the two to go together and really listen from an objective listening. Like it's not listening to respond or to reply or to react or be defended or offended by, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say, for example, you were my husband, okay?
Yeah.
Or my ex-husband in this case. And I really wanted to have a newfound relationship with you such that we could create a new vision, a healthy vision for our children moving forward, okay? Because you both have to be willing to want that same view, and you both have to be truly exhausted by the cost of divorce, the cost of stress, and the resentment that happens sometimes in marriage,
obviously,
right?
It's terrible, right? Yeah.
So, and generally what I see in relationships is usually it's just one person coming to me at first. Okay, so it usually does start with one person believing that they see that big picture. Okay, so what I'll do is I'll usually get the wife to go to the ex-partner and say, you know what, I really want to know, this is the interview, I really want to know what it was actually like being with me for 12 to 15 years. You know, and I really want to listen in a way that listens outside of who we were in marriage, you know? Like, what was it good, bad? What was it really, really like? And all I'm going to do is just listen, okay? I'm not going to respond. I'm not going to defend. I'm not going to be offended. I'm just actually going to listen. So I really want to know what it was actually like being with me, okay? So just lay it all out, okay? So, and that, I was trained in that myself, to have that ability to see what I was like in my own marriage. And because I really wanted to see what it was actually like for my children's dad. And today, we're in a position where it's like him and his wife have asked me to stay over and look after their kid and my kids at their house. You know, so it's like, and by having that distinction, by having that capability to listen, to hear the impact and get the empathy
mm-hmm.
of what it was actually like for him.
Yeah, because that's virtually unheard for the most part.
Right?
Yeah.
That's one of my distinctions I use. Because until we actually get out of pointing the fingers at each other, the scorecarding, you have to listen. And listen in a new way. Listen from a place of understanding, not from listening from a place to reply.
That's very interesting. Because it's funny because majority of the people I hear that have been through this, usually when it ends, that's it, no more. Mm-hmm. And then if there's any communication, it's all very stupid and not even, mm-hmm. nothing good about it in any way at all. They just only talk to one another because they have mm-hmm. to.
And, you know, it's really quite sad because we respected each other. We respect each other. We loved each other. We got married to each other. We had fun with each other. We had playful times with each other. We had kids with each other. And when you get to a place of such harsh resentment and to a place where, like, there's just, like, I want nothing more to that person, it's like, and when you got children, it's just the main people in the impact of that is your kids.
Your kids, yeah, they always get the brunt of it.
And it's all over, just that all the stops that happened in the marriage, all the stops. And usually the stops are, first off, acknowledgement. We all tend to let life get so busy, we forget little things like, oh, you know what, I noticed you took out the garbage this morning. I love you so much for remembering that. That's so awesome. Thank you so much.
Simple little things, right?
Simple little things,
yeah.
You know? And just little things like, oh, I woke up to you this morning. I saw you laying beside me. Thank you so much. It's so amazing. I feel so safe and so good that you're there with me. I can't wait to see you when I get home. Like, these things get lost.
They do so quickly, don't they?
I call it the golden key that sadly gets lost very quickly in relationships. The other thing is communication. Communication suffers very fast in relationships. Because what tends to happen is we go into thinking that the other partner should think like I do. Like, why does this not make sense to him? Like, why is he not thinking this way? Like,
common
sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember when my ex and I were in counseling, actually, inside marriage, she actually called me out. She said, Charmaine, why do you think he knows what you're thinking? Like, is he in your head? I was like, oh, man. And I was sitting right beside him. I wanted to just freak out and defend myself, right? Mm-hmm. But that's what happens. It's like we actually think our partner should know better. Sad.
And it just falls back to what you talk about, what you've said, mm-hmm. is about the communication part, right?
Yeah, communication.
And you lose touch.
Yeah, you lose touch, acknowledgement. Just a sense of appreciation for each other. Respect is very important. Just all those key things. And then what tends to happen, you have kids, sex gets lost, like literally.
Yeah.
And then bodies form different and insecurities come in and then work gets busy and then affairs start happening, money gets lost and all these kinds of interceptions, I guess, if you will. And they're not reasons for separation and divorce. I will tell anyone that comes to me who's divorced and separated that that's not the reason why you got divorced. It's not the reason. You just chose divorce.
Rather than working on your issues.
You can choose to believe that they're just issues, and you have to believe it's possible that you can actually just authentically clean them up to create a new way of a yummy, yummy marriage. Because you got married. Yummy, yummy feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know? So if it's the immediate, it's always easy. It's always an easy way out to separate and divorce. I will say this. I let go of my marriage because what I saw was when I was 28, when he had asked me to marry him, I knew at that moment I was a no, you know? And but
you
I said,
feeling?
Yeah, I knew it was a no. But at the time, he was so nervous, he was so excited, asking me. We were together for three or four years, and we were really good friends, and he was a good guy, and everyone was saying, you know, it's a good thing to do, it's time to do it, and I never really listened to my gut. So naturally, the integrity, I guess, if you will, of our marriage was quite tumultuous. It was fun, it was good looking, we were great friends throughout it all. I will tell everybody today that he was definitely the man that I was to meet. To be the father of my children, for sure, because he has given me a very healthy view when it comes to being an amazing father, which
you,
I never
you,
had.
You do have two beautiful children.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. too much blonde, people would call our family. It
was doesn't matter. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, thank you.
So now, I understand the couples now. Now, do you apply this to, like, well, for example, survivors? Do you apply your coaching to survivors as well?
In my facilitating, for sure.
I mean, outside the gatehouse is what I'm talking
about. Outside of the gatehouse, yeah. Yes, in my coaching, for sure. When I'm listening to those who are suffering from either addictions or from child sexual abuse, I can really just hear what they're hanging on to. And what tends to happen when people are coming to me, just recently I had a gentleman who really wanted to break through areas in his marriage. And he found that his background, because he was sexually abused, and his background, and what was happening for him was that his relationship had gone stale, he had felt like he wasn't appreciated or acknowledged, and he just felt not as important. And so in order to, I guess, be the cause of the matter, you have to take responsibility first. If you're willing to be the cause in a matter of making a difference in an area in your life, you have to be willing to be the one to take responsibility. And that's a pretty tough game for people to take on, because they're
absolutely
like, why should I take on responsibility?
Absolutely.
This person's treating me this way,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's natural for people to have that reaction.
Put up a wall and say, no, it's not me. Don't take responsibility for their own actions.
Don't we all love that
idea,
absolutely, though, right? It's,
yeah,
like, I'd rather not take that kind of responsibility, and yet when you do, it opens up empathy,
mm-hmm,
it opens up understanding, and it opens up a clearing of possibilities you can't see when you're in that state. And so when I had heard what was actually going on for him, I heard what was missing from her through the and I don't know what's going on with her. I only know through interpreting from what my client was telling me,
mm-hmm,
right? But what I could hear, what was missing for her, I could hear what was missing from him. He had to do the assignments I gave him. And what started opening up was I actually have one of his quotes on my website, was that he had created a new way of speaking with his wife that he never even saw ever in the time that he was with her. And what has opened up for them is a lot more respect. And it was so beautiful when I see that, because I believe in marriage. I really do believe in marriage. And but you got to do the work. You just got to do the work. So this kind of coaching, it's not just listening. You don't just come to a therapist or a counselor and you go away for a week and you come back again. I literally give you a post report and a post assignment, such that when our next time we see each other, you must be coachable and take on all the assignments and apply them in the area till next time I see you. And if you're not creating the results that you're looking for, usually what tends to happen, as I see, is they're not taking on the coaching.
Or, yeah, they're just not willing to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
That's behind it. It's involved,
yeah,
in trying to change things.
Yeah, you have to be willing to be uncomfortable, for sure. Go where you don't want to go.
So what about children? Do you ever deal with children?
Actually, on my website, I have an ambassador child right now for September. I had no idea this conversation would actually happen. Her name is Kyra, and she's my little ambassador for September. She's 8 years old, and I was sitting with her, and she was showing me a puzzle that she had made, and I was just out of pure conversation, because my children are always looking forward to go to school, I was like, oh, you must be so excited. School starts in a couple of weeks. And she, all of a sudden, Stuart, went like really scared. Her face went totally different from just showing me the puzzle. And I really got the impact. I was sitting there, I'm like,
it's
Kyra.
Fear of some sort.
Yeah, I'm like, Kyra, why are you not looking forward to what's going on? Usually my kids are like so excited to go back to school. What's going on? And she says, the kids are really, really mean at my school. And this is exactly about the program tomorrow, what the walk is for, right? Like, this is going to help nail bullying too, right? But what she unveiled to me was that kids in grade 5 and 6 at her school are calling her a-hole. That's how she said it. They're calling me a-hole. They're following behind me. They're scaring me. And she said to me, my mom and I have been to the principal, and there's it's not even making a difference.
Kind of a form of bullying, right?
Yeah. And the way she said that to me at 8 years old, I went, wow, yeah, I can tell why you're not wanting to go to your school. I can really understand that. That's frustrating to not have it make a difference, literally trying to make it a difference, right? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, you know what? I said, you have a voice. And for you to even say something here right now, you constantly stand in that voice. And you make sure, because I bet you there's other kids that don't like that this is happening. She goes, yeah, I got friends that are having the same, they're with me and they don't feel good. And I go, yeah, well, you're a little leader. I said, you have a voice. You keep sticking up for yourself and for those, because that behavior is not acceptable at all. And you know what happened, Stuart? She ended up just like, you know how when you feel proud, and then you cry from that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she broke down and cried, and
yeah,
I go,
cry of joy.
And I didn't know if I had offended her or if everything was okay. And I go, oh, I'm sorry. Are you okay? She goes, yeah, I'm just happy. And I go, yeah, you should be happy. You should be proud. You know, and you keep speaking. You keep being a voice. You know, and I was really impacted that we had that conversation, that she could feel safe to talk to me like that and unveil what was actually happening for her. And I think that if we can bring this kind of empathetic listening, if you will,
mm-hmm.
through group circles of that program that I got into the schools for those ages, we're going to see a lot more breakthroughs like her.
I'm so excited for you to be doing this. I just wish this was in place when I went to school. Oh my gosh. Holy jeez.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for you in regards to this.
Yeah.
So, where do you see Ruthless Coaching going mm-hmm. in the future? Where do you see yourself going with this in the future?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have a certain goal you're trying to achieve, or you're just gonna go with what's going and just see what happens?
Well, I think where I see Ruthless Coaching in particular going is just making a difference for those in divorced and separated situations, and those in trauma situations where it's a place to turn to when people are just really, truly, truly exhausted of what keeps occurring for them in their life, bad relationships or depression, or even just the view it is as a parent for the breakdown that they're having and the impact of the kids, is to be that outlet for them. And also taking my work into the program, because it's transformation work. And when you can bring the kind of listening through this kind of coaching into group circles with parents and school staff especially,
mm-hmm.
and kids, it really does make a unique difference when it comes to seeing things shift, seeing things alter. Not just being a resource, a flyby resource or something we're going to forget later. It's going to be literally something that's going to break the ice and create new for both areas, trauma and for relationships.
Oh, that's great. That's
mm-hmm.
fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know the community can sure use this.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough of this out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's so great to hear you're doing that.
Thank you.
So before we jump on to another topic,
mm-hmm.
Give me some highs and lows in regards to what you're doing. Do the lows first, and then finish off with the highs, which is really, really important.
Okay.
Just,
you mean about the program? Or?
Yeah. Well, just some of your experiences you've been through in regards to your coaching that you're doing.
Okay. Some of the lows are when people don't take on the coaching and they don't get the results that they're looking for. Or they'll drop out. Like, I just had a girl actually be in touch with me, a client. Who really wanted to take on the coaching, and she backed out and she just got overwhelmed and caught up in her life, and she actually just was in touch to get back on track again. And that's normal. That's so normal. And I let her know that's so common, and not to feel bad about it because, and this is, again, speaking to the low part, but what tends to happen is we get scared. We get scared in the world of possibility. So we'll back out.
So
that's the low. That's the low where I go, oh, I wish they would have just stayed on and taken their all and be
so
courageous.
What do you think they're scared of?
I think they're scared of if something that they actually believed in came true, then what next, right? It's being big, like being courageous to speak, like this girl that I was speaking of, she had to address the group of people at work because she felt really disempowered in a voice, and she felt being run over by the group of people at work. And she didn't further on beyond the consultation of the coaching. And I think what was there was she was too afraid to speak up as a group. And that's exactly what this whole interview is really about. It's just being a voice. It's really having the kind of courage to be able to speak up when we're feeling disempowered, when we're feeling a loss of power in a certain area in our life.
So I guess that would be, I was going to ask you about what kind of challenges some of your participants would have, and I guess that would be a good example right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great example because, and even in the gentleman, the client I spoke of earlier, to have the kind of courage, and I guess when you go to speak to your partner in a new way, that sounds unfamiliar to your partner, it's going to sound kind of foreign, right? And you have to be willing to come from an area of new compassion, a delicious, juicy way to put in a new conversation that might not look the same as you had 15 years of marriage. And this is the coaching. This is the challenge. Are you willing to take it on? Are you willing to maybe go back to that 20-year-old?
Yeah.
That creates a little juice, but it's new in the 40-year-old.
That's totally intriguing. Totally.
Right? And the only person who's willing to believe it and say how it goes is you. And are you willing to take it on?
That's right.
And that's where people are like a little confronted or very eager. And the highs are when people take on the coaching. Like I coached a woman first, and what was going on for her was that she and her husband had done adultery in their marriage, like both of them had affairs.
Yeah.
They have two children, and she was committed to breaking through her insecurities. She had big insecurities, and she didn't like the space, and she was highly, highly faithful also too, right? And so she started breaking through barriers around all of that on her own insecurities first. And then I invited the idea that we both get coaching from me. And today, they've gone
leaps and bounds.
And they're unrecognizable to how their marriage was before. And they took on the coaching, like little things that I do, like make a list of what is just delicious to the both of you,
mm-hmm.
that is a turn on to both of
yeah.
you, that just like flirts with each other, that causes the romanticism, and put that list on the fridge every single day that the two of you get to walk by and open up because you got to get something for your yummy children that you both created.
Mm-hmm. Something that gets your emotions flowing.
Yeah, and create the kind of appreciation and love like it's not the same love that you had 10 days ago. If you could create love like a painting, like a palette,
mm-hmm.
in all the words that you see it, then write those words down. And they can be yummy. They can be delicious. They can be juicy. They can, like, create words.
Mm. under injury.
Right?
Totally.
It's your story. It's
yeah.
your life, and you
yeah.
only get one life.
That's right.
So I love my coaching because it's inspiring, it's motivating, and it's confronting, and it works.
Yeah, so to finish off with this,
yeah.
give me a highlight that really stands out, something really, really positive, something really, there's something that, like, one of your clients that really stands out that's really, really, like, called self-empowering, you call beautiful, call
mm-hmm.
wonderful, something
mm-hmm.
really stands out that may come to your mind.
Mm. I'll probably just say that one. I think that's the best experience I saw was seeing that couple come from a real lost place. Like, they both had committed adultery. And that wasn't funny. Like, when I saw them both, it was lost. You know? And that's the thing, is that when I go into a situation where, you know, he's not coming home, he's staying late at work, he's going out on the nights for good night. Yeah.
You know, there's something going on.
Yeah. And she knew that too, right? So it was at a place of real desperation, I guess. And it takes, you know what, and I acknowledge them both willing to take on the commitment that they are for who they are in marriage. And it was a matter of really getting to those places that got stopped, that had them choose alone the affair. You can't blame each other. You cannot blame each other. You have to take where it went down with each of you. And you get to that moment. You get to the impact of what the other one made it mean like, or the kind of significance it was in empathy. And when you get those moments back in time and you're able to like authentically clean them up and you see what is actually possible on the other side of the fence, but not just what is possible, but what you can actually create, it's so colorful. It's so like heaven. And people go, oh, yeah, whatever, right? And we do that. It's human tendency to go like, yeah, whatever. It'll last for a bit and then go south again. Well, that's life. Welcome to life, right? And people stay on with coaching because life doesn't stop.
Yeah,
it really
going.
Doesn't.
It doesn't stop
and we're well. And we're only human, so we're going to have little detours in life, right? But what's great about Ruthless Coaching and my kind of training, though, too, is we get better as leaders to catch these kind of detours, and we don't get stuck in them as long as we were before, right? Whereas in this kind of training, you go, okay. And it's no different than actually here at the Gatehouse, too, where it's like you pause for a moment and you catch, what is this reminding me of? Who is that person reminding me of? You know, whenever you're in those confronts, and then be mindful of that, and then choose what you can actually do or say moving forward versus like responding to it from being triggered or reactive.
So plug yourself one more time, then we're going to jump on to another topic. And I'm going to get you to plug it one more time before we're finished this evening.
Yeah,
well.
For sure. You can see my work, my testimonials on my website at ruthlesscoaching.com. And you'll see my ambassadors, you'll see where I'm speaking, and then you'll see the promotions that are happening right now in my coaching if you're looking for any kind of help on that. And then also, too, we are helping out abuse by petitioning tomorrow here in Toronto and various areas around the city. We have groups of walkers that are walking around handing out petition vote cards for people to get the school boards to vet the Empowering Voices Awareness Program and put in Abuse Awareness Week. And if you would like to join this walk, you can visit the website at empoweringvoicesawarenessmonth.org, or you can also email me at ruthlesscoaching@gmail.com.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
So now, I've been so lucky. I've been able, well, first off, I met you here at the Gatehouse,
mm-hmm.
obviously, first.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the Gatehouse a little bit. I've been fortunate enough. I've facilitated with you now.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a few things together. Even the conference,
mm-hmm.
we spoke together.
Yeah, side by side.
Side by side. That was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, give me some insight to what brought you to the gatehouse.
Oh, I didn't know if this conversation was going to happen. I'm so glad it is. I remember when I heard the gatehouse. I was in Ottawa at the time at a documentary showing from the Men's Project.
Yeah, quite familiar with that.
Yeah, and
that's where I originally from too, as well.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
very cool. And I was referred to the Men's Project by an interview I had put together to meet with a psychologist, because at that time, and that was about four or five years ago, I was in a space independently on still always helping out the victim, and now in a new place on what is it that we don't know about the offender now. Because it was starting to cause an inquiry for me on the abuse starts with the offender. So what is it? Why are these numbers kind of flatlining here and going up? What is it that I don't know on how I can make a difference in a different area? And stay with helping victims, but I wanted to really inquire into this, what was happening for me. So I met with a psychologist, Dr. Jairus Theron, who was treating offenders in the federal prison. I can't remember how I was referred to her, but I drove all the way to Kingston to interview her. She's now working with Corrections Canada, but she worked with Rockwood Psychology, and she wrote many theories and treated on her own will, because there's no funding, and this is what I learned with her in the interview. She treated offenders in the federal prisons on their background, their history of abuse. And it's clear that when the high percentages of those who offend come from their own history of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So what I took away from her was that in Ottawa there would be a showing of what's actually going on for male victims, which was starting to be new for me to take on too, because at that time I was pretty much through my healing, but always healing, as we know as facilitators. Still, I hadn't taken on the area of male people who were abused. So she had not only introduced me to someone who was abused, but he had also offended. And when I met him in Ottawa, it was during that documentary from the Men's Project. And at that point, I had learned about the gatehouse. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to come to the gatehouse and hear what it is that I don't know about the gatehouse.
Mm-hmm.
So I had set up the meeting with Arthur Lockhart.
Director of the gatehouse.
Yes.
Founder.
Yes. And we had met in the front room, which at that time there was a fireplace in there.
Mm-hmm. No more.
And, you know, and I'll tell you something. When I was a little trepidatious in meeting him because I was a little triggered by his name because my offender's name was the same as his.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was at the stage, too, where I was okay to let it go. So I met with him. And what I got instantly present to was that he was also trained in transformation learning. Not from where I'd gotten it, and from his own sources. And he saw and he sees things way in advance.
He does. He's very, very.
And I love that he sees humanity like he does. And he works in seeing that possibility exists. Like, he believes that we're all one. He believes that we all aren't born to hurt people, right? And he acknowledges the level of courage it takes to speak. And he's also there in restorative justice. And I believe that the punitive system needs a whole new...
Needs a big makeover.
So I found that him and I truly aligned. It was like no coincidence that our paths had aligned. Now, I've done a lot of mentoring and facilitation and had group facilitation, public speaking, up to that point where I had met Arthur. I have never met or have worked with an organization like the Gatehouse that has programs that actually cause a huge difference like the Gatehouse does. I've worked with organizations where programs are actually sadly not running. I've worked with organizations that compete with other organizations, and that never made sense to me because we're all here with the same intention.
Yeah.
You know, the Gatehouse offers out so much at free will and never competes. And I just really, really honor and appreciate the kind of work that they're actually doing for people here. And to be a part of it, it's completely aligned, 100%. The integrity of my work with the Gatehouse, and it's all volunteer, is aligned, 100%. I love what they're up to. I'm involved in things that are on the table that are possible for our future that, I don't know, you just never know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, in the role of a role as a facilitator, you're doing both sides. You're doing women's groups and you're doing co-ed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that. As far as, well, start off with the women.
Yeah. I just finished 15 weeks with the phase one women's group, and wow, they're all willing to take on phase two. And I'll tell you, I never even heard of co-ed groups till I got here to the Gatehouse. And I don't know if it's even happening out there, anywhere else, to be honest.
I haven't seen it. It's the only place I've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to see my group of women, I'll be honest, I had done one of the weeks here where two groups had joined together, and our group had come in, and they were all smiling. Two of them out of the four of them said they were transformed. They were so excited to, like, move on to phase two. And to go from women's group into a men and women's group and to feel excited about it from what I know in week one of women's group, it's very vulnerable. It's like an open sore, like you're telling your story for the first time. And a lot of self-worth, I think, is like lack of self-worth tends to be the theme that I see when it comes to both groups, though.
Which brings me to this. Now, like we've co-facilitated together,
mm-hmm.
doing mixed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you think of that whole concept of having men and women together to heal in regards to their abusive past?
Mm-hmm. I think that's really great because it allows them to see that they alone put meaning to each gender when really they have the same story. You know, it's unique to their own experiences, and it's a common ground. And so when they see that not all men or not all women are such a threat at the end of the weeks of healing in these co-ed groups, it becomes such a respect. It becomes such a new love, and it becomes no more fear. And to see that breakthrough from the, like, I think I don't know if you agree to this or not, but to see the kind of calm that comes even off the first night, because when people walk in at first,
and they're chewing their fingernails,
you know, and then at the end of the night, they're saying it's not too bad, you know, and to be honest, you know, in the first 3 or 4 weeks, you might see a couple people drop out,
or not,
and even in the women's group, I think we had one or two people drop out. I think it's just all in our own unique experiences and what triggers us and where we want to keep going or not going, and either which way is all perfect. Like they say, every time in our groups, how we're trained as facilitators is that however which way it looks, wherever we are at, whatever we are feeling, it's all whole and perfect. And it's perfect timing for the timing for how it's happening and what it all looks like because of where we're at in our facilitation, of where we're at in our healing. You know, it's perfect timing because we're going into the next step. You know, and I have come to times where I have felt scared, where one of our participants was feeling suicidal. Mm-hmm. And as a facilitator, I asked her permission to take on my request to be in touch with our leaders here, like Arthur or Maria. And she took it on. And in the past where I've requested them to be in touch with our leaders before, and some people haven't, right? It's all in what you're willing to take on to heal through this and break through it. And when she took on the coaching to go get, or the request to go get help, she took it on. She is a changed person today. She went from the beginning of saying it out loud that she was numb. She didn't know how to feel, right? And at the end of the 15 weeks, she was so proud of how her feelings were, no matter what they looked like.
She was able to recognize.
She was so alive.
Yeah.
And she was so thankful, and she was so, like, ready to take on life. And she was, like, just bursting, like a child jumping up and down on a beach, you know? And, like, to come from numb to suicide, to, like, a child jumping on the beach, through our work as a facilitator, that makes us pretty proud, doesn't
it? Oh, it does.
Too?
Oh, it does.
Eh?
And then some.
Yeah, and that's amazing. Like goosebumps. I got goosebumps right now.
I know with my personal experience doing I really like doing the phase two because it's funny we were talking about this tonight this evening earlier with other participants and facilitators in here. Actually, I shouldn't say participants, but with other facilitators.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like, asking what group I like doing the best. Well, I like doing both of them actually.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible because they have incredible. Well, I can certainly relate to most of it. Obviously, most important. But it gives me, you know, great support for myself, and I see things I didn't see before. Mm-hmm. Every group I see that I'm with, I always see something different.
Mm-hmm.
I always discover something different,
mm-hmm.
and that's to me is very, very self empowering. It gives me it's healing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely healing because it helps me recognize things that I haven't
mm-hmm.
seen before.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to talk about stuff and to find stuff about yourself,
mm-hmm.
but you never find out all the little things. There's always
mm-hmm.
something that you miss,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I don't care how much you journal or how much your thought process you go through, there's always something you miss.
Mm-hmm.
So when you repetitively do it over and over again, you always discover
mm-hmm.
little things, and that's
the
wonderful thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then most important is watching the transformation. Like for us, for myself, I can speak for where I came here, and I think about how down in the sewer I was and how much I changed over that period of time. It's so wonderful to see other people who go through the same process and realize there is actually light at the end of the tunnel. You don't have to be in the sewer, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
But I love doing the phase two, is my point, is what I was trying to get at. Because I know once you discover where you're at in phase one and realize, well, hey, I am human after all. It's not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can feel. I'm not numb anymore or not as numb.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to this next level
mm-hmm.
and you sort the stuff out and you teach yourself that, you know, you're worth something.
Mm-hmm.
And that you
yeah.
have meaning in life. And, you know, it's not all negative.
Mm-hmm.
There's another side
mm-hmm.
and to yourself that we just haven't been aware of because we buried it for all those years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the great thing about when I'm doing the phase two. That's what I really enjoy. And granted, too, I've said this before to everybody out there, that the phase two is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more work than the phase one. Don't get me wrong. Phase one is a lot of work, too, because
mm-hmm.
you're doing some pretty deep soul searching
mm-hmm.
to figure out where the hell you're at.
Yeah.
And the phase two, though, is a lot of work. And if you don't do the work and you don't, like you talked about with your Ruthless coaching,
yeah, you got to do the work.
You have to do the work, and if you don't do it, you're going to stay stuck. And
mm-hmm.
I hate even saying that word,
mm-hmm.
stuck. But you stay stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You won't move forward.
Yeah.
In other words, you stay on the same broken record over and over again. So each week by week, you're not going to move forward. You're going to say the same song,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to sound the same way,
mm-hmm.
and after a while, it's going to get pretty damn boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and if your friends don't tell you, or your spouse, or whatever the case may be,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
somebody you know,
mm-hmm.
then you know.
Yeah. And it's like, it's allowing them to see how willing are they to really believe beyond stuck.
Yeah, there is another side. You don't have to be stuck.
Yeah, and when you got a group of people, especially men and women, to know that it's a common ground, that you can get out in this world and you don't feel so alone, and there's a lot more people out there, men and women, that are dealing with it. We don't need to be afraid of the genders attached. You know, and it takes something, I'll tell you for sure.
I couldn't wait. The first time they did a co-ed group, I was very fortunate to be here and they did that. And it was only 8 weeks at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I could not wait to get into that, to go. And, well, you know, actually, that's not like I'm contradicting myself. Well, I had my reservations too at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask Al Page, one of the facilitators here, actually, he's probably the longest facilitator here next to
mm-hmm.
Art. If you were to ask him, he'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Kelly was co-facilitating with him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my reservations, and I told him that right from the beginning. You know, I'd done phase one, and I had been, this probably was a period of about six, 8 months somewhere in between there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of sliding back a little bit. You know, I was kind of up and down. I wasn't too sure where I was going. I'd done the first part. I knew about myself. I had all these feelings that going around inside me, which I understood finally, but I didn't know what the hell to do with them,
mm-hmm.
how to apply them, how to change certain things about myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was so happy when I went in and did that the first time. But my point being, that I wanted to do is I wanted to go in with a co-ed group where I can hear from the women.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to hear the woman's side because I was abused by a woman as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I desperately wanted to hear, I don't know, anything, something
mm-hmm.
to maybe change my thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily for me, well, and I'm grateful, I did hear stuff that I wanted to hear. I mean, some I didn't want to hear and some I did want to hear, but it actually helped me.
Out of curiosity with that, what sticks out for you the most as being the most helpful? Do you remember at the beginning?
Well,
especially hearing from the women's side for yourself and having had been harmed by a woman in your life, right?
Well, I think the thing that helped me out the most was, I mean, probably that they had the same, you know, thoughts and feelings that I had
mm-hmm.
towards myself.
Mm-hmm.
The meaning, okay, well, I'm sure I heard that from the men, but it was from the women, so... I mean, it sounds simple, but it's not. Like, for example, like with my fear, my anger,
shame.
My isolation, it was all the same things.
Yeah.
Granted, they weren't abused by another woman. They were abused by a man. But
mm-hmm.
but my whole point being is, it was the other side,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And got me to understand, well, I mean, this is how I felt, and I hear this from other men, but I haven't really heard it from a woman. So
mm-hmm.
if she's having the same feelings
mm-hmm.
that what happened to her, like what happened to me, then... Well, then I could relate. So it wasn't all, well, I don't know. I won't use the word, I'm just trying to get the right word to say. It wasn't all bad
mm-hmm.
without being too foul with my language.
Yeah.
And to me, I would find it very uplifting. Like, I mean, I guess I'm not really being too specific on what you're asking me in regards to
what
question.
I think what I'm getting is that when you hear from a place of sharing,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like you get a relatedness,
yeah.
right? And you got related to, you've already been related with men,
yeah.
right? And now you see that without gender being attached, but women feel the same thing.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was feeling, rather what I was getting from being with the women. I was getting the exact same thing.
And that's such a sense of compassion. It's a new sense of compassion.
Well,
it doesn't make you feel so guarded with women and kind of maybe, like, it's the same thing with women, I think, with men. It's like we have this stigma about, like, if we aren't hearing from men what their story is of abuse at all, and we stick to our own healing, as I'm speaking for myself, and we stick to our own healing as women, we tend to go, it's normal. We tend to go about life in a way where we're guarded with men, and we have kind of a bit of a stigma going on how men are. And I find that when you just shared what you did, is that when you see from compassion that it's actually the same with women.
Exact same thing, no difference.
It kind of wonderfully breaks down the barrier of like having that kind of like guard for the other gender, right? And a little bit more respect, right? Like
a lot more.
Right? So that's cool. So I think that's the pride that we get as facilitators, seeing that unravel between men and women.
Absolutely. And every time I do this, I'm quite happy. And next week I'm finally going to start a group again, but it's going to be a men's group.
Mm.
I like I said, I like doing the phase two, the co-ed.
The first
but
when they tell their stories, usually the first time.
Exactly. So I really look forward to next Wednesday because I'm going to start my new group again and with another facilitator. So I really look forward to that. I haven't done it all summer, so I'm kind of anxious to get back to it. And I usually try to do as much as I possibly can through the time, but I kept busy here all summer. So I'm honored that the Gatehouse asked me. I do one-on-ones as well, so I'm very honored that they asked me to do that. So between that and the radio show, it kind of kept me busy all through the summer. Here I am saying I wanted a break, and I didn't really take much of a break, but that's all right.
Yeah.
It's all good.
I know. You go home and you feel so good, you know. It's like, wow. I'm just, like, feeling what you're feeling. It's like when you go home, it's like, you know, when you're part of making a difference for someone, I don't think any money could afford that.
No.
You know what I mean?
No,
that's
not
why
at all.
I'm happy to just do this volunteering.
So where do you see awareness as far as sexual abuse is concerned in the future?
In our education system.
Well, okay, that's one part, but what about outside the educational systems? Where do you see that going? Do you see that changing?
Especially with organizations like the Gatehouse, because I mean, when did it start where men were finally starting to speak up? We still have a long way to go where women started to speak up, right?
Yeah.
We still have a long way to go with that, but men are finally starting to speak up. And we have a very long way to go with that.
Yes, very long.
So I think it's the capacity of those like ourselves and like where people are willing to take on opening up awareness groups that support men and women and families and children and community, and just causing a more comfortable awareness such that the conversation isn't taboo to talk about it anymore. So I think it's just constantly taking your story, I guess, if you will, speaking up about it, and using your story as a place of empowerment versus struggle and doing things for others, where I see awareness going.
Now, what about this is always I always have to ask this question. Now, where do you see where do you see our laws in the future? Do you think you're going to change? Like I'm not trying to get political or anything that way right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I'm after. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious if you think, or are you optimistic that it's going to be, well, maybe more change for the better, you think?
I think with classes like Arthur's teaching,
like restorative justice.
Restorative justice.
Yes.
I think that if students and children are our future, like the students the students that are in his class, whenever Arthur invites me to speak to his class, I always acknowledge that class because, wow, they're actually taking on a future where a lot of people see
wouldn't even go.
Is impossible.
Yeah.
Or wouldn't even go because, like, are you kidding? You're actually going to think restorative justice for an offender who's like destroyed a child's world.
Yeah.
Right? And then we got to sit back and ask, is our punitive system really actually working for us? Right? And how old is our punitive system?
Yeah, 200 years old. Well, I think it's an exaggeration, but it is very old.
So to answer your question, I think we got a long way to go.
Are you optimistic? That
I'm very optimistic. I don't know if I'm going to be here in the lifetime that we're actually going to see.
But hopefully for our children anyway.
Hopefully for our children. And if I can be something for that's awesome that you just said that. If I can be a profound footmark for change and I have children, then I'm hoping that they'll make another footmark to really, really be a part of even what Arthur is doing in restorative justice.
Right.
So, because we need our laws changed. far as I'm concerned. Punitive system and punishment, all that kind of craziness.
It's Stone Ages. It's so out of date. And it's kind of like you say, like virtual. I'm doing it for my granddaughter, right? And the way I see it, like it's their future.
Yeah.
If I can put my foot in there and stir things up, I sure as hell going to do it, and I'm doing that, and I will not stop until it's done, right?
Yeah.
Until things get going.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And we have to. And the thing is, though, is it's tricky because we have to be willing to go again where we don't want to go.
That's right. Most people don't want to go there.
No way. And when we look at the idea of taking on the inquiry about what is about the offender that we don't know that is working and not working, right? And what I've learned in my work in that space and that inquiry is that there's groups out there like COSA, Circles of Support and Accountability, there's organizations that are facilitating offenders, there's communities, group support, opening up with all of the right people like police and psychologists, supporting those offenders that are actually authentically not interested in their past anymore, that are looking to have a new and better life away from what they did in their past. And what happens is that they need the support, like awareness in the community, to stay accountable to, it's like, would you put a bottle in front of an alcoholic?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, this person knows that they cannot be in a surrounding of children, right? That person is accountable. Like, he takes full responsibility, that's just not his interest and that's his weakness at the same time. So can you actually look at being a community where you accept an offender that comes into your community and support the idea with all the right people in place that you create a new and better future with that person?
So they can actually integrate them into society again and not have to worry.
Yes, and I have sat in a group where an offender still lives with his family. And he used to be a Bay District professional. He chose to do what he did. He got charged. And he has gone through an enormous amount of consequences in the punitive system. And he's gone through healing in a lot of ways from not only what he did, but also from his own history of abuse. And today he's facilitating. He is highly intellectual, still living with his family because he has not been able to get a job, okay? And when you use the word integration, what is unable for them to really, truly integrate and create a new and better life with them is our registry. Once you're an offender, you're always an offender. And employers will not hire offenders.
Yeah.
So listen to this story. This guy actually is excited to get a really good paying job, a really good job back in the Bay Financial District area, downtown Toronto. He actually goes through the interview process, and gets the job. Because he's in the registry system, his morale cannot settle without telling his new employer that this is his history. So with profound courage, after getting the job, he goes to his employer and states his history and hopes he doesn't lose the opportunity. Sadly, he lost the opportunity because the employer acknowledged him for having the courage to speak up about it, but he didn't take him on because if anyone in his corporation or any of his clients found out about it, because the registry showed every offender.
Yeah, it does.
He lost the job. So that's the thing is like, and I'll tell you, I don't even know how. I don't even know how. I just hope that there's some kind of something we can do.
Well, there has to be, because we have to deal with this in some way or manner.
And that's the place that we're at. I don't know.
You know, like, the trouble is, like, we talked about the justice system. Like, it's grossly outdated, and it needs some massive, massive overhaul. And
like,
this
how
is
do you
just,
trust? How do you trust? I get that employer.
I get him.
Understand where he's coming
yeah.
from, and I really have empathy for the guy at the same time. It's like, how do you create a new and better life when you can't even...
You can't change what you...
And yet I understand the employer's perspective. It's like, holy Jesus, what? You hired an offender? Are you kidding? I got kids. Like, what the hell? Like,
yeah.
you know, and all of that. And his client, you know, all of that. I totally
it's
understand.
All the
I understand both sides.
It's all the stigmas.
And what is it then, if I'm going to understand both sides, which I actually do, what is it then we as a community or as an employer can we do to address the safety, the responses, the reactions, the how can we support it? How do we support it?
That's a very, very good question. And
That's our future.
It's our future, and it's going to bring great debate over the
wow.
next years trying to sort this out, because to me, something has to be done. It cannot
mm-hmm.
be swept under the carpet anymore,
mm-hmm.
and we have to deal with it once and for all. Whether it's mandated through the government or
yeah.
Like at a federal level, right down to a municipal level, it has to be dealt with in some way. It cannot keep going to the rate that it's going, because
mm-hmm.
when you look at the numbers of survivors that are coming up now,
mm-hmm.
and I see in the future, it's there's going to be more than what the probably already is more than what they can handle, but it's going to be, I feel deep down, it's going to be overwhelming
mm-hmm.
that they're lost now. They're going to be more lost.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's going to come back and smack whoever in the hiney
mm-hmm.
and say, like, hey, what's going on? Why are you sweeping it under the carpet? It's kind of like what's going on over UK right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've been following that
no.
over there.
No.
With all the scandals regarding cover-ups at the federal level of the government for pedophiles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, that's another thing. Like, I was going to announce that, like, you know, the conference, like, the
mm-hmm.
week or two that
yeah.
the gate has been on, well, actually, there's a place in the UK that's actually had their very first conference on
mm-hmm.
for survivors.
Yeah.
And it's actually happening
in
September.
Is that guy that comes to the...
No, it's somebody else,
mm-hmm.
somebody else totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to announce that they're actually going to have a conference for survivors, which they've never done.
Mm-hmm.
But my point being is it's a big cover-up over there. And I, like I said, I've always said when I come on here, I'm more about people. I care about people, obviously, and where I am and where I'm from. But it's also important we need to hear about what's happening abroad. I don't care if it's in the UK or Africa or US, wherever it's from, because what...
The global meltdown.
It's a global meltdown, and it's a really, really big problem over there now. And if you follow BBC or anything like that, people will understand what I'm talking about, and to understand the level that this has come to. And I don't think people understand the level that this has come to over there. And it's just a matter of time before it's going to nip on our heels here too,
mm-hmm.
and something will have to be done. Something more.
I think it's just if we can not. Think about that we're letting go of helping the victim.
Yes.
Okay, we're never letting go of that. And it's also time to look at what can we do to really, because when I met with that psychologist in Kingston, she had told me that there's no funding for the offenders in the prison.
Zero.
There's
none.
Zero funding. So what's happening is they're not getting treatment. And then as soon as I say that, I'm hearing people go, well, why the hell should they not get treatment, right? Is that they too, it doesn't justify their actions, okay? So let me be responsible to how I communicate this. It does not justify that they go out and do what they did, okay? They're in prison for a reason. While in prison, though, and when I charge my offender, I know for sure he didn't get any treatment either. So it's like they need to get what we get as victims.
Absolutely, absolutely. Something like you can't
doesn't
just...
Doesn't that make sense?
Absolutely, it makes perfect
like,
sense.
Like, that's where we got to go, okay, community, if we're actually wanting, if we're really, really wanting to see a decline in child sexual abuse, then let's get some treatment and healing for the freaking offenders in our prisons. Like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And not only that, but what about the people that are thought about doing it, but never done. What about treatment for those people?
What are you talking about? What do you
well,
mean?
Well, okay, I just stepped up a whole new level here.
Okay.
Okay. Now, what happens if you have a person thinking about it that wants help but hasn't offended yet?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
See?
I actually have a girlfriend who works with the criminal area of the police, and she told me that someone had just called her to get help because he was thinking about sex with a child.
Yeah. See?
And when she had told me that, not only did she tell me that, but not who he was, but where he was. And where he was in my community.
In your community, exactly. And you,
right?
And you didn't,
she didn't tell me who it was, but I was like, holy crap. Well, first off, as someone who's in this field as an advocate and all the work that I do, I really acknowledge that person for even being able to say something about it
right,
before
pretty,
doing it.
Exactly. That's very, very, like, well, brave
like,
that individual.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yes, I want this program, actually, when we speak to in groups, and when we are in schools and we speak to groups of parents, of school staff, of students, to touch on that area also. I want to have people to leave with resources where if you're not only the one that's being harmed, but you're thinking about it, that you actually have some support too.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought
I'm so good. Glad you brought that
well,
up.
Well, and you know what? I must pay homage to a certain individual. And I've had this conversation, actually, I mentioned to you that I did an interview with Lynn McDonnell.
Mm, and, I love her.
And she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. Mm. I can't wait to interview her again. And actually, the reason why I brought this up is because she's going to discover that herself.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, that's totally, totally incredible. And I am very curious to talk to her again to see...
What do you mean to discover that for herself? What
well, no, no, what, sorry, I mean, let me rephrase that. She discussed it with me that
oh.
she was going to try to take this on.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm very anxious to talk
wow.
to her to see how that's going to come about
like
for
she's going
to
create
a program.
A group, a program,
right. a program
for those who are actually first thinking about
that's
it.
That's right. They have not offended.
Wow.
But I'm very interested in
I got to connect with that woman.
She's a wonderful woman.
No, I've met her at the conference, I
yeah.
think, but I've never actually... Because I've actually had a client that takes on her groups, too, and I've only met her just through the passing. And she's phenomenal. Her work, I only hear, is so amazing. So, and for her to actually consider taking that on, woohoo!
She's also a part of the Good Men's Project as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I can't wait. I'll probably talk to her in the fall again,
so
or actually in the fall. Sorry, into the new year.
You've
I'll be
interviewed
talking.
Her already?
Yes, I have already.
Yeah,
and she was telling me about this. I was very intrigued when she
mm-hmm.
told me about this, because to me, this is
smart,
just part
smart
of
woman.
This is part of the puzzle we're talking about
uh-huh.
that's
mm-hmm.
so important.
Catching it right there.
Catching it right there.
Yeah.
And you see, and if people are willing to come up and
mm-hmm.
and admit this,
mm-hmm.
and to get some form of treatment,
mm-hmm.
then I think that we're really off on the right track in regards
yeah.
to prevention.
Well, look at that guy. What was his name?
Jerry Sandusky?
I can't remember his name, but the Hollies, Holly Jones.
Oh, Holly Jones.
Douglas? Was it?
Yeah, Gordon Stuckless. No, no,
no,
not the Gordon Stuckless. Oh, Gordon Stuckless was with the...
hockey player.
Yeah, no. He was with the Maple Leaf Gardens.
Right. I can't remember the guy that did what he did to Holly Jones. I was working with another organization at that time. He had said in his own statement that before he had chosen to go out and abduct her, he had been on child porn, like on pornography
yeah.
with children. And had he caught being aware of what he had done before and then in between going out to the street and abducting her and doing what he did, that is where Lynn is speaking to. It's like catching that before you do what you do. Oh, there'd be so much more of none of what's happening out there right now.
You know, but it comes down to, though, these issues need to be brought up. They need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad we're talking about it because people need to be aware. I mean, okay, us as survivors,
mm-hmm.
okay, first and foremost, you know, like we need to be taken care of. There's
mm-hmm.
no doubt about that
mm-hmm.
because we have a hard time functioning. I mean, everybody I've come across has had some kind of issue dealing with life in some way or fashion.
Mm-hmm.
and we'd just do anything to have a better quality of life. But there'd be lots of them if we could deal with these people, rather the offenders, right from the beginning. To me, what I've talked about as far as get them before they do it, that would be, I mean, that's a start,
right?
That's a start.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you know what? It takes a lot of unreasonableness, I guess, if you will, to even have that kind of mind capacity to even go there. And if we're people of change, and if we're willing to actually take on the idea, okay, what can I do to help? And help in that area, it takes something to take that on. And I'm certainly willing to be a part of that.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I really feel in the next, maybe the next year, a couple of years, I really see this whole awareness thing really blowing up. And I'm really, really, like yourself, I'm really happy to be part of this because I'm going to scream loud and loud, very, very loud, just
very
so,
loud,
you know, just so.
It interrupts. Like, we're committed to interrupting this conversation, no lie. And if that means being bold and ruthless, if you will, then we're gonna step on some uncomfortable.
Well, we
ground,
are
right?
Absolutely, but it's
and you got to do it without a make wrong and a blame and a compassion and
exactly.
an empathy and an understanding.
Because that doesn't solve anything.
No, because like I'll be honest, I'm with all those people that wonder and don't know how to do it and I'll be honest, I don't know how to do it either. And but what I do know is that I want to help that area. Is that I believe actually from seeing it myself. And we actually don't believe stuff until we see it.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I've seen it, where success happens, where men and women who have abused are wanting to create new and better lives away from what they've done. I see it. It exists, right? Then we have to, outside of these people, just know we're not going to put the bottle in front of the alcoholic.
That's right.
We're not going to put the child in front of... That's how I forgave and accepted my offenders back in my life, is because I know I can actually empower this relationship by setting up mutual boundaries and ability for us to move forward in the relationship versus think it's impossible, right? So as a community, what I see from all of this experience and what I've witnessed, how offenders are creating new and better lives, is that we as a community, like COSA, which is Circles of Support and Accountability, are creating communities, a new perspective, a new structure that has them feeling safe and supporting those offenders moving forward, creating new and better lives. How do you do it? What is the structure? What makes me feel safe? What supports them? What creates a better future for everyone, such as there's no more child sexual abuse? It means supporting the community, it means supporting the victim, and it means supporting what we can do for the offender that has truly taken responsibility for what he's done with his past and looking to do new and better things with his life or her life.
Now that's funny because here's another topic all in itself now. Victimization. Well, when a person goes to court and the prosecutor basically tears you a whole new butt and turning it around like it's your fault because your abuser did it to you. Any thoughts on that?
I just kept telling the truth. Like, are you talking from my own experience?
Well, either from your own experience or from what you've seen over the years and
well,
the stories you've heard.
I'll speak from my own experience. I can't speak for anyone else, but when the prosecutor was tearing that new button for myself, I guess if you will, was I just knew that I had to keep just speaking the truth. I had to be unattached to how it would all go. Like, I didn't know if my intention was not to charge my offender, to be quite honest. I hated where all that went to. All I wanted was him to just stop. He was working in the service industry where he was with people, where he was with children. And what I had learned was it wasn't just me he had offended. He offended other people in my family. He had offended people out of my family. So all I wanted him to do lovingly, very lovingly, was not go to jail, but get help and stop. That's all, right? And all I had to do, all I knew in court was just tell the truth. That's it. And so whatever happened, the judge would do and the judge would say. And so when the prosecutor came at me and said all of these things, like, it's my fault, like, brought up, and I had to read, because when I was disowned from my family, and I went into isolation and shame and depression and suicide, I was admitted into the psych ward for about a month and a half, 2 months, and I had to read this thick of papers, and I swear, every few pages I read quoted me as having the symptoms of personality disorder, lying, looking for attention. So the prosecutor had used that against me.
They're only lying to his defense.
Yeah.
He's just scared of you.
Yeah. And they also had a surprise witness come in on his side, which actually in the end didn't harm my case whatsoever. It was more of a manipulation person that they brought in, and it didn't work, sadly. Well, good, but. So I think that as a fast forward, I think that just when you come from the truth, I remember at 9 years old having a conversation with my pastor at church while my mom was closing the Sunday school. I didn't really know if telling the truth was a good idea, because at that time the sex was happening and stuff like that. And before 9 years old, telling the truth was never good. I always got in trouble for telling the truth. But I had this one big giant truth sitting with me at 9 years old. And I remember sitting in the pew waiting for my mom to close the Sunday school. And I had that all in my mind, and I just wanted to be able to tell someone.
Someone.
And I didn't tell my pastor what was happening, but I remember him coming over to me and goes, "Well, hello, Miss Lovren, how are you today?" And I said, "I'm okay. I said, just waiting for mom." And I said, "I have a question." And he said, "Okay." And I said, "Is it really good to tell the truth?" And he said, "You know, Charmaine," he says, "take this hand." And he took my right hand and he said, "Spread your fingers really, really tight, like really apart." And then he said, "Take your left hand and spread your fingers really, really tight in the air and put your hands together." And he goes, "Just know that it's always good to tell the truth. Even when it feels horrible, tell the truth or be with the truth. It's okay to be with the truth." And I never forgot that. I never forgot that. So even in court at 21, I believed that the truth would just go where it's supposed to go. And the judge, I remember sitting there, and I'll never forget his words. He goes, "I really believe that if Charmaine didn't have to be here, she wouldn't have been." And it's really sad. And he got charged with 2 counts, gross indecency with a minor and sexual assault. And I wasn't happy with any of it. I was only happy that I was finally believed.
After all that time.
And I was sexually harmed and groomed from 5 years old to 21, finally believed. And it had to take so many other people around me to get offended. And it had to be all of being disowned and suicide attempt. If anywhere I live my life, it's unhidden today. It's completely knowing that truth is the only way, no matter what. And being a voice, unafraid, vulnerable is another way.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that with us.
Mm-hmm.
And some key things that you said, one being your voice,
mm-hmm.
and then actually being believed after all that time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, like, it's mind-blowing as far
mm-hmm.
as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And encouraging, because we always hear good stories or hear bad stories of people going through the process
mm-hmm.
of trying to get their abuser charged. And
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, the way our laws are, it is what it is. And, I mean, that's kind of a dismal way of putting it. But
mm-hmm.
the
yeah.
fact is, it is what it is. And
yeah, and I remember after I had successfully charged my offender, I also got aware through my counselor of compensation for victims of criminal injury. And through that process,
was that a hard process?
It didn't seem hard. I remember it being hard.
Was it long? And
no. All I needed was the charges, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. But I didn't even know that compensation existed, because my counselor is the one, because she counseled me through it, and she counseled me through the beginning of the healing through to the end. And she had gotten me aware of, her name is Jan Austin, by the way. I want to definitely plug her. She's on my Facebook, and she's living, ironically, in the town that I grew up in. I met her here in Toronto. And but we reconnected on Facebook, but she is the one, Jan Austin, that got me aware, supported me, filled out all of the paperwork, and I got compensation for victims of criminal injury, which allowed me to pretty much catch up on all of the money I put toward counseling. And I mean, like, money can't even take it back or pay off anything of what happened. But it certainly helps if people are ever looking at charging their offender or how do they do it. They can certainly Facebook me anytime. I mean, I can't tell you what your experience is going to be like or how it's all going to turn out or what to even expect, because I never even knew any of that at all going into it. All I knew was I wanted the action to stop.
That's wonderful.
And whatever would happen after that, whether he got charged or not, I don't know. And it's not common. And then after actually 8 years, he actually ended up telling the family and people that he did what he did. He denied it for a long time, and then he ended up telling everyone that he did what he did. And that's not common either, like to have offenders come out.
Usually with the stigma of society being what they are, they tendency to hide.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd hide too.
I would too, exactly.
You know, but it takes a lot of courage to speak up even as a victim, and it takes a lot of courage to speak up as an offender. And when I've met now a few offenders, and I'll tell you, it takes something as a victim to let go of the trigger, to let go of the reaction, to let go of everything and really listen to their story of their harm, and then also listen to what they did. I remember reading one offender before I was to meet him. I was actually very afraid to meet him because, what? Like, to hear all of those boys that he had harmed. And he was very remorseful. You know, he was doing new things to not do what he did in the past. But it takes on a new listening, for sure.
Well, Charmaine, I think our time is coming to a close.
Awesome.
I'm so grateful that you took the time to come here and talk with me, us.
Thank you.
Out there in the big worldwide web.
Mm.
It's so important. And I really appreciate you sharing your stories and how transformation works in many different ways.
Mm.
And it's so important. I want people to understand that you don't have to stay stuck in your past.
Mm.
And by you coming in here is really inspirational. And it shows that you can get out of where you are and move forward in your life.
Mm.
And I'm so grateful for you coming in here. And I want you, please, plug about tomorrow again one more time, please.
Absolutely.
And also about Uber Roosters Coaching. Please do that.
Okay, for
if
sure.
You wouldn't mind.
Not at all. First, I want to acknowledge you, too. It takes this kind of avenue for people to hear that there's possibility where impossibility lies. And for you to be talking about transformational healing, and to be able to offer the voice out there globally like this through your blog, thank you, too, for what you're doing. I really appreciate you also. So tomorrow, Dundas Square, 8 a.m., we have a petition walk that involves petitioning to all school boards to to vet Empowering Voices Awareness Program and Abuse Awareness Week. You can go on empoweringvoicesawarenessmonth.org, and you can find me on Facebook, Charmaine Lovren. Also, if you're looking for any kind of coaching to get unstuck, my coaching is pretty much 100% guaranteed results driven based on how coachable you actually are. So you can go to ruthlesscoaching.com and reach me there at any time. And again, it's Charmaine Lover, and I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. It's ruthlesscoaching.com and empoweringvoicesawarenessmonth.org.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
I'm going to make a few closing remarks here, and then we'll sign off.
Okay.
This is the thing I was talking about. I must point this out. I kudos to the UK. Actually,
This is through survivorsofabuse.org is what I'm talking about. So for the very first time, and I applaud you, really applaud you. For the first time in the UK, this is a conference for survivors, social workers, GPs, and counselors. And I would just like to pay homage to the fact that you're doing this, that you're all getting together and talking about this issue. And it's going to be tomorrow, or well, actually, probably is tomorrow there now already. Saturday, September 13th, is going to be at Park Crescent Conference Center at 229 Great Portland Street, London, UK. And you can go on their website, which is survivorsofabuse.org.
And notice the dash.
Oh, yes, between. Yes, I should point it out. Thank you. So it's www.survivors-of-abuse.org.
Right.
And you can find out more information about this. So I was so intrigued when I saw this on Twitter the other day, and I thought I couldn't wait to share this with everybody, just to show you that it is a global problem, and it's just not here. It's everywhere. So within saying that, I wish to thank you all. And I must say right off the top, take care of yourself this week. I hope you have a great week, great weekend. And I'll see you next week. I won't talk about what I'm going to talk about. I'll put it in this weekend. If you want to go on the Blog Talk Radio, you'll see what I'm going to talk about next week. I'm not going to talk about it right now. But thank you for your time. And thanks again.
Good
Charmaine.
Night. Yeah, thank
have
you so
night.
Much. Yeah,
and I'd love to have you come back again sometime.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, we're doing another petition walk actually in October.
Okay.
So when you join me on the social media platforms you'll and the website, you'll see all the walks that are happening. We're committed to putting the program in for November 2015. So we're doing a lot of work to get to that point, and you can certainly join us.
Thank you. I definitely will, and I'll definitely plug it as well.
Okay.
For sure.
Thank
you. Lots in advance. So I'm Stuart Thompson. This is Personal Transformation. I'm located at the Gatehouse here in Toronto. It's at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West. In Old Etobicoke, or Toronto as it all is now. We're on the web at www.thegatehouse.org. Again, thank you for your time. Have a great week, and remember, take care of yourself. Talk to you later. Good night.